The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, our great friends at both dealerships. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, General Manager Brian Danahy tells us the 2019s have arrived, so the 2018s got to go. It's your last call to save at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa with the season's best deals. Lease 2018 Escalades, just $859 a month. Hurry to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, but they're always there at edmorescadillactampa.com. So many offers at the website, and as well as you see at joebucksfan.com and at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, just east of 75 on Causeway Boulevard. The 2019 XT4 is now in stock and ready for immediate delivery. 39.5-inch, best-in-class rear leg room. So many options. You got to check it out at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. And, of course, the season's best sales event continues there. I'm looking at their website now. A new 2019 Cadillac CTS lease, $419 per month. See the dealer for all the details. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, proud presenters of all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com, and such tremendous supporters of our Tampa Bay community in all of their charitable endeavors. Get to edmorescadillactampa.com, edmorescadillacbrandon.com. Here's Ira.
All right, the Ira Kaufman Podcast is on. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is in the house. It's Tuesday, a rare situation, Ira. We are here recording at the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. The podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And the Sage is here. He's been working, everybody, from Rondé Barber to John Lynch to the locker room.
Brooks was up here.
Brooks was up here. Buccaneers win.
Sap outside the locker room. Oh, yeah. Now, we should tell our listeners, we don't have our normal equipment today, but you know what? We're resourceful. We do the best we can, and we ain't going without a podcast. We get the job done over here.
All right, Ira. Look, Buccaneers won. They had their first laugher of the season.
Ooh, I like it.
And you are here with me, Steve Isbitz, and Lee DeKemper to talk about it. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. We'll go right to the defense.
Which way are we going to go? You can start with special teams as far as
we're
I can.
We're going right to the defense. 9 points.
I got the obvious answer, DeKemper. Monty Kiffin's in the house. Boom! I saw Monty before the game. He looks like the crazy professor. I believe his kid is on the staff of the 49ers.
Oh, is that right?
So yep. That's why he was here.
Yep.
Oh, he wasn't here for John Lynch or the Bucks.
Well, maybe Lynch a little bit. But it was a defensive effort that would make a Monty Kiffin proud. And I believe they forced punts on the first three San Francisco possessions. That's the way to get off the field. That's the way to build confidence. This was a game where once it started, Lee, tell me if I'm wrong, I never really thought the Bucs were going to lose once the game started. I thought they were in control of this game 90% of the time.
I can't say I was that confident because given the last couple of years, I wasn't even close to being that confident. By the way, when you said rare, a rare recording, yeah, a home win, that's rare.
There you go.
But, you know, Monty Kiffin, I saw him when I was coming in the stadium. I chatted with him briefly. I said, hey, what are you doing here? I was joking with him. I don't think he knows me. We talked very briefly. But I felt sorry for the guy. I was worried for his health because I thought he's going to watch the Bucs defense that we're used to. I thought the poor guy was going to have a defibrillator or something.
Yeah, it's like when Sapp and Lynch and Brooks watch, you know, this
Buck
defense.
Well, worse. These guys, worse. Those guys are in their late 30s, early 40s. Monty Kiffin's 70-some years old.
You were worried.
Yeah, I thought they needed the EMT to sit next to him.
Their third down defense, Steve, let's jump right on that. I believe they were 1-for-8, the Niners. Outstanding job by the Bucks. And, you know, in a way, the guys that really jumped out at you are not the Gerald McCoys, necessarily. It's Vita Vea. Whitehead had 11 tackles, Steve. 11. By far the most on the Bucs.
10 solo tackles, but that's not a good day when your safety has 10 solo
but
tackles.
But it speaks well for Whitehead.
It does.
I understand that. Nassib, your man, Lee, I thought he dominated the first half.
Ooh.
I was watching him. He came off the ball very hard. He was given the right tackle of the Niners, all he could handle. Vita Vea showed up. Good day all around for the Buck defense. They gave up 100 yards rushing to Breida, and he's a good player. I didn't realize he played for Brooksville High School, right up the road. But they made a backup quarterback look like a backup quarterback for the most part. So, and the pass rush was good. What jumped out at you, Lee, today defensively?
I understand the Niners are a three-win team. They're the same both
the Bucs. Two-win team.
Two-win team.
Two-win team, yeah.
But you could argue this was their best defensive effort, and they're absolutely decimated on defense. They are decimated on defense. So it makes you wonder, you know, that's the first thing I think of. Like, it makes me wonder, do the Bucs have dead weight on defense that they can get rid of that has been starting, yet these guys... Steve, not really jokingly, half jokingly referred to them as JV in a past podcast. He's not wrong, but they had their best effort. Again, I know it's San Francisco. That's number one.
Let's remember the Niners, I believe, had two starting wide receivers out also.
They
that,
did.
That helps the Bucs.
Sure. The second thing that jumps out of my mind is, I'm not saying he is, but I think you could make a fair argument that Jordan Whitehead is the best Bucs rookie. You can make an argument. Now, yeah, Villa had a good game today. I'm not saying Carlton Davis is horrible. He's not.
The bar may not be that high, Steve.
Exactly.
May not be that high.
So those are two things that jump out. The Bucs did this despite having an absolutely decimated defense and Jordan Whitehead. He's obviously a keeper.
And hats off to Ryan Smith. He ended a seven-game streak of going without an interception. That's hard to do in this league. Seven.
And they capped it off with two. Yes. So now they're not going to hit that record, Ira. Isaiah Johnson with the late pick. Gives the Bucs three on the season, and a pretty good bet that they'll get to four, which is what the winless Detroit Lions had back in 06? 08?
Toothless.
08? Whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, it might have been 08.
Was that your friend
Toothless.
Marinelli?
Toothless.
So say as well.
Nobody's saying the Bucs are going to the playoffs off a game like this, but it was a very solid win, Steve.
Solid win, and before Lee chimes in here, you know, decimated on defense, Lee said that, but... the defensive line has got a lot of horses there, and this is how Vea was supposed to play. That's what the exciting thing is. No, nobody expects him to have 16 sacks this year and all that, but the guy showed up, made a couple of plays. If everybody makes a couple of plays, all of a sudden you have a decent defensive line, and actually Vea told the story of McCoy told all the guys to run out together as a group. No individuals today, and McCoy said he was very emotional when JPP got that 10.5 sack, that he got choked up and all that stuff.
And JPP gets hurt and then comes back into the game. Warrior. You can't get this guy off the field, Steve.
Well, I was surprised they left him in the game all the way to the end. That's another story. But Gerald said, I asked him about Vea getting to his first big game as a rookie. How important is that as a rookie? McCoy interestingly said that Brenton Buckner has been riding Vea. And he also said, all the guys have been all over Vea, too. Come on, man. Break through, and today he did, so they were extra happy for him.
The reason why I was clapping earlier, Ira, the long national nightmare is over. Watergate dragged on for 4 years, maybe. Vietnam dragged on for 9 years. This has been 13 years. Just complete disgrace to the Republic.
You know,
finally it's over with.
Guys, the funny part of this is Martin Fennelly, notable columnist for the Times.
Humorous.
Of course, great columnist for the Tribune all those years. At halftime, instead of going to the Bananas Foster, give Fennelly credit, he says, Ira, you got Simeon's number on your phone? I said, yeah. I want to talk to Simeon Rice. So I dialed it. It rang five times. I figure it's going to voicemail. All of a sudden, hey, Ira, it's Sim. Hey, Sim, Martin Fennelly wants to talk to you. Gave the phone to Fennelly. Here he is, immediately talking to Simeon Rice and telling him the streak's over. And Simeon goes, who got it? And he said, JPP. And Simeon's first line to Fennelly was, but the defense still stinks, right, Martin? And Martin goes, well, not today, Sim. But in general, yes. I mean, that's classic Simeon Rice. But the streak's over, Steve. And you know what? We're not surprised because we thought he'd get double digits.
Now that I think of it, Ira, can you call Simeon now? We'll get him out. We'll dive patch him through the podcast. Seriously, it was such a long time coming. 12 consecutive seasons. Now it's broken. And
with five games left.
And McCoy was legitimately emotional about it. Now there's five games to go. Can he get to 15, which would be something? Rice had 14 in that season, 05 season. But the interesting thing about that historical nugget is the Bucs were the number one ranked defense that year. So it's a little easier to get double-digit sacks with the number one ranked defense, whereas... JPP does it here, 10.5, with a defense that's, what, 28th, 29th, 30th? So
I had no idea, and Lee, you don't know until the guy comes to your town and plays for your team. I had no idea that JPP was this kind of a warrior. I knew he had a lot of talent. Steve, I'm talking about heart and grit. You don't know these things about a guy until he comes to your town. And just the fact that, you know, they're 3-7, the guy got hurt. It looked like it could be a fairly serious injury.
Oh,
yeah. It looked like it was probably not going to come back. And the next thing you know, he's back on the field for a 3-7 football team. Steve, that's got to rub off on the rest of the guys. So bravo to Light for pulling off one of the better trades of the year by an NFL team.
That may be one of the best trades in team history. Third round pick for that guy?
You know.
JPP, Cutter can't say enough good things about him. And Cutter was suspicious of the guy initially. You know, he didn't know anything about him. And when off-season training camp, you know, JPP says, I'll show up when
right.
I'm required.
That's right.
But I'll be ready. And Cutter admitted he was doubtful. He was suspicious. Like, yeah, I heard that before. And Cutter actually confesses, I should say, that he was way off base about JP. He can't say enough good things about him.
Didn't Dotson tell us, Steve, this summer, I wasn't sure which JPP we're getting.
That's right.
Are we getting him at his best? Or is he coasting? Remember that, Steve?
He did say
and
that.
They got JPP at his best. I'm impressed.
Now, did you talk to Dotson after the game?
I did. I believe he said his knee.
Yeah.
And he mentioned hamstring. But he didn't say he couldn't play next week. Going to see how he feels tomorrow. He was hobbled a little bit, but it didn't look like he was getting any medical attention. So I wouldn't count him out necessarily against Carolina.
All right, Sage. Of course, the listeners can hear your podcast on Google Play, iTunes, Podbean. You continue to pick up subscribers.
I'm off the charts, Steve.
Leave reviews. You're off the charts, but you'll get back. You'll get back, Ira. If you tweeted your podcast, it might help. If you tweeted it three times, it might help.
I believe I got a shout-out from Rondé Barber today on the Fox broadcast.
Sage. And not surprising, you were working it everywhere. And this weekend as well, talking to John Lynch.
That's right.
And we'll get to that a little bit later.
I got to give Ira compliments. You got hops. I never knew you had hops.
I got hops?
You got hops. Derek Brooks told me, because I want to talk to Ira at halftime. And initially, I was going to escort Brooks to where I thought Ira was. I said, well, I'll go get him for you. So I go up to Ira. He's talking to Mike Sherman and Tom Jones, of course, both of the Times. And I interrupted him. I said, Ira? And I went like this. I said, Gold Jacket wants you now.
I thought he was talking about John Lynch. I didn't know what he was doing.
And Ira almost ran like there was another free buffet down the hall.
I didn't even say goodbye to Mike Sherman. I just got the hell out of
here. Golden.
Maybe he'll be the next head coach. Oh, wrong Bucks, wrong Mike Sherman.
And then I saw Brooks, and I said, you still calling Vita Vea Velcro, 55? He goes, he looks better today. He does look better today.
He did, and, you know, it's an interesting win because the Niners' 10th-ranked defense and the Bucks moved the ball very efficiently, balanced, and not a terrible football team. They were 1-5 in close games. Played a lot of teams tight. They put up points this year at various times. But Bucks dominated, which is so rare for us to see. I don't even know how to feel right now.
You know, Richard Sherman showed me nothing today. He didn't have
I didn't know he was
he
out
didn't
there.
Have any juice.
Yeah. I didn't even know.
Every time I looked, he's trailing Mike Evans down the field.
That's true.
You know. So the big story in many ways, the big picture, which is sort of where most Bucks fans are focused. And Ira, before we get to that, I know you will be devastated by this information. We did a poll. I did that poll. How many Bucks fans wanted the team to win today? And it came in at about 56%.
Wanted them to win.
Wanted them to win.
Sounds about right.
So it was about 40% wanted them to lose for draft purposes. The other remainder was, I don't know, kind of thing. You know, Bucks fans are focused on the draft, rightfully so. But the big piece of the puzzle next year is Jameis Winston. Biggest piece of the puzzle. Here he is, comes out here. It's efficient Jameis. It's winning Jameis. It's no turnover Jameis, which I don't know when the last time we could possibly say that
was. No kidding.
Even when he won last year, late at home, he threw 3 picks against the Saints. But here we are. The guy looks good.
That's about as good a game as Jameis Winston's played for the Bucs. Very poised, very confident, and in his words in postgame, decisive. Decisive. Get the ball out quickly with conviction. Somebody asked him about the pass to Humphreys. Now, guys, that is the kind of pass that Jameis gets in trouble with. Going against the grain. He's not settled with his feet. Jameis, why'd you throw that ball? He was wide open.
Of
course I'm going to throw it to him. But he was very proud of himself getting the zero in the interception category. This was a big game for Jameis Winston. Before the game, I talked to Rondé Barber. Might be one of the reasons he gave me a shout-out. But I went in there. He was with Kenny Albert, one of the Albert clan. You know, his father, Marv, is 77. Still going strong.
Wow.
I said, Kenny, any thoughts of retirement for your father? Not a chance. Wow. God bless him. 77.
Knicks, right? Or no, Nets.
Didn't you babysit him back in Brooklyn?
Never mind that over there. So I gave him some matzo ball soup one night. So so I said to Rondé, you know, and I wasn't taping anything. I was just chatting, and we talked about Hall of Fame a little bit. I mentioned Jameis, and I said, Rondé, my Jameis meter for 2019 is 75%. Rondé Barber looked at me right in front of Kenny Albert and said, that's about exactly where I have it. 75% that he's coming back.
And we
I think the arrows are pointing that he's coming back, unless he royally screws up down the stretch.
That's significant to me. Not that you measured.
And Rondé Barber knows what goes on. And
Rondé Barber knows
it's $1.
Because he's part of Jason Light's kitchen cabinet. So
just talk to Cutter. I believe on Saturday, before he ran over to Columbia Restaurant for the John Lynch luncheon, Rondé was meeting with Cutter and the guy. So Rondé's got a good sense of what's going on around $1 place.
No, he should. He's
like, and I think it backs up a lot of what we've been saying on the podcast.
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at that. 75%, you know, Rondé's an insider. It means there's a lot of uncertainty. That's a lot of uncertainty.
Well, uncertainty if he screws up down the stretch. I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Hey,
I'm not rooting against the guy, but that's uncertainty. 75% is uncertainty. You know, in Tennessee, they're 100% sure Mariota's the quarterback next year. So, but that was before the game. Right?
Yes.
So now I would have to say it's probably closer to 80.
80, 85.
You know, I mean, when Jameis, if you look at him objectively, all the haters and the non-haters and all everybody else, you watch his performance today, you say, well, gosh, this guy obviously...
Why would you want to start from scratch?
Can play the position in the NFL at a high level. He didn't make any mistakes. Why would you want to start from scratch? Still 24. Maybe he's matured. We'll see what's going forward. That's what's exciting, though, Ira. But Jameis... very subdued, very measured after the game.
Very measured.
In the post game, talking about sort of one game at a time. But he did kind of admit that, which I thought was freaking bizarre. Love to know what you and Lee think about this. He was sort of admitting that he was, you know, struggling in Ryan Fitzpatrick's shadow, you know, being quiet and staying back and trying to keep up with Fitz. And
I think he said, wondering where I fit in, sort of, behind Fitzpatrick. Odd.
It's odd only because he's in an odd situation. Now, granted, part of that is his own doing. But Jameis, wherever he's been, he was big man on campus. He was the guy. He wasn't the guy earlier this season. Now, granted, one year he was redshirted at Florida State. Well, he knew he wasn't going to get on the field. He knew that. There was no doubt that he was going to be up in bars with Fitzpatrick. He didn't know he was going to be on. I can sort of understand that because that's a peculiar, unusual position for him to be in. So I can understand that.
You know, guys, I think after a game like this, it's important to point this out. The one constant for me regarding Jameis Winston from the day he was drafted, it has never wavered. He is a fantastic competitor. He is a guy that genuinely could throw for 98 yards and they win 13-7, and he can't stop smiling after a game. There's not a lot of guys like that. Mm-hmm. I believe that's totally genuine. Mm-hmm. There's nothing made up about that. He wants to win. It's all about wins for this guy. And that's why it was killing him that he was contributing to the losing.
Yeah.
And he realized that. Well, it took a while to realize it. Beating and getting it drummed into him by Dirk Cutter, as Cutter should do. Jameis, you're the only guy that can screw this team up because you got the ball in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing for Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Whoever's under center. And I don't know how you guys feel, but I don't think there is anything fake or ever has been about Jameis Winston and his passion for winning. And we talk about how there's not enough guys in that locker room like that. And I'm sticking with that. Lee, am I wrong?
No, I absolutely agree with you. I'm going to bring up something else. And I put the video up on Instagram. And I put it up on Twitter. I don't know what to make of it, but I've seen it once before, what I'm about ready to say. And that was with LeGarrette Blount. And I was told by people, suits in his organization, what I'm about ready to say is one of the big reasons why Blount was traded. They didn't like his attitude. They didn't like the fact that if he didn't get enough carries, he pouted even if the team won.
You can't win with guys like that. Well, you can't have guys like that.
Like I said, and what I'm about ready to say, I almost hate to say it because it's almost like I'm disparaging the guy without having his side of the story. I'll just say what I saw. I'll say what the video saw. I was downstairs. Me, you, and Jay Recker, you had just walked away. Recker and I were, you know, catching guys coming up the field or preparing to catch guys up the field. All of a sudden, I hear the cleats on the concrete. Now, here comes somebody. It was DeSean Jackson in like a 25% run off the field. He beat the referees off the field. He was the first guy up. He couldn't. It was seconds. Seconds after the game was off. And when I say seconds, I literally mean seconds. And he beat the referees. You can see in the video, the referees came from behind him. He bolted to the locker room. The team won. He wasn't there to celebrate with his team on the field. He wasn't there to talk to people on the other side, be it Richard Sherman or whomever. You know, guys like to trade jerseys. You know, real respects, really. You've heard that before. He couldn't wait to get off the field. Now, granted, him and Jameis, once again, couldn't hook up. But getting off the field immediately after a win, couldn't get away. I assume I didn't see him in the locker room, so I'm sure he was out of there like a bat out of hell. That's why they got rid of Blount. I don't know if winning means that much to Jackson. Again, I hate to disparage him because I haven't have not heard his side of the story, but that spoke volumes to me, the visual, the eyeball test. Now, again, you know, Jameis and DeSean Jackson couldn't hook up. Jameis had no problem with everybody else. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Jameis can hit Mike Evans, long passes too. Jameis can hit Godwin, long passes too. Humphreys, long passes. Brake, long passes. O.J. Howard, down the field, no problem. Only one problem he's got with, DeSean Jackson.
The other side of that, Lee, though, you know, to be fair to Jackson, is Fitzpatrick can find Jackson.
Yeah.
Why can't he? Now, Steve, you got to give me credit, even though you don't want to, but you got to give me a little bit.
He doesn't have a pen out, so you're all right.
Steve, I said this a long time ago, and I said it unequivocally. DeSean Jackson is not going to be here on the third year of his contract. I said it right away. Some fans said, well, what's Kaufman talking about? How does he know that? That's the way it looked, especially once Godwin looked like he was a player, and he is. He's not going to be here, Steve. He's not going to be here.
It's a done deal at this point, which creates an interesting situation for the Bucs. Because, yeah, I say it's a done deal. Now, look, we don't know who the next GM is going to be or whatever.
That takes a lot of speed out of the equation.
But I agree with you on the 80% chance Jameis is here, and with the money Jackson's making, $10-plus million, and all the other weapons, well, why would you want a guy that your QB has chemistry issues with when you might be able to unload him for a fifth-round pick and more flexibility? So,
and these chemistry issues are going back. There's a big body of work now.
Well, it's real. It's real. It was obvious today. I mean, and I can't blame Jackson for his frustration. Jameis overthrew him. He threw one ball that basically bounced to him right at his toe.
Yeah.
But Jackson did have 8 targets, which tied for the lead with the Bucs. So it's not like they're not throwing him the ball. He's not mad at Dirk Cutter. He's mad at Jameis, and that's a cancerous situation.
He's already been on national TV saying he prefers Fitzpatrick.
I don't know. It's messy, and we know there might be some other things behind the scenes with that relationship. And, of course, Jackson has to be traded. So who the hell would want him here?
What is the Buccaneers' win-loss record with Jackson but with Jameis behind center? With and without.
I understand.
Yeah, you know, without Jackson, they lost in a tiebreaker for a playoff spot.
And guys, we should mention this. You know, we don't want to go the whole podcast without mentioning. On a days like this, you look at Mike Evans and you say, this guy's elite.
Yeah.
This guy's right there on maybe a notch below Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, but a notch. He's right there with A.J. Green, slotted right in there. There's other days when he gets taken out of a game like the Carolina game. He didn't show up. Got called out by his head coach. But on a day like today, guy's a beast, Steve.
Yeah, look, you can't have a great day every day. Nobody does. And Evans busted the 1,000-yard mark today. I think I was the only one to talk to him in the locker room. Evans was...
I saw you kneeling down and gabbing.
There was a throng around Humphreys, and Evans is dressed. He's like, I guess they're coming to me after Hump, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I'll talk to you now. We're talking. And then we sort of got caught up, and then the wave moved from Humphreys, and next thing I see, Evans is leaving, and I don't think anybody talked to him. So I asked him about
that. Was he proud of the you know, distinction?
Fifth consecutive year to start a career, 1,000 yards. Randy Moss has the record of 6 consecutive years.
The only other person who has done that is A.J. Green and Moss.
A.J. Green has done it, so he ties A.J. Green.
This is to start a career.
To start a career, 1,000 yards. And A.J. Green, he's not on that streak anymore. He tied. So I asked Evans about it, and he said, you know, I've never really looked it up. He said, so many people have been pestering me this week about it. I don't really even know the details. And then he's like, did you look it up on Moss? You sure? Because didn't he play with the Raiders out of the gate? And I'm like, no, he was drafted by the Vikings. And he's like, nah, you know, he's like, I don't know. And we were arguing about stats. I'm like, come on, Mike. I just want to.
But he's on pace for 1,500 yards.
Then the Bucs receivers coach comes over and he's like, no, Mike. It's right. I'll show you on my phone. And he's showing him. Yeah, Fulton comes over and I'm like, oh, okay, good. Thank you. And he's like, oh, man, coach has got your back. You know, we were talking about it. But he said, Mike Evans could be very real. He's like, look, I'm just doing my job. He's like, I'm really just running routes, catching balls, doing my job.
He's a very emotional player, and, Evans. He's very emotional. And if he feels he's getting pushed around out on the field, he doesn't just take it.
No.
He yells at the official. He yells at that player. He almost got into it today.
Yeah.
He's got to be careful that he doesn't get thrown off his
game.
Wasn't
that Monken who kind of taught him how to channel that energy? Because I remember when Cutter first got the job, he hired Monken. And he told Monken, you've got one job, fix Mike Evans.
Yeah, he was dropping more balls and getting penalties. He could have had a penalty today, but they didn't call it. But he's an emotional guy, he cares.
He's really cleaned up the dropping the balls. That's really been cleaned up.
Yeah, he's dropped a couple this year, but still, nobody's
nothing
perfect.
Nothing like he was.
And he's it'd be difficult to say he's not a top five receiver. So, hey, kudos to Jason Light.
Here's something you've harped on for years, Ira, and for whatever reason...
And I know what's coming, baby.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, let's hear it.
For whatever reason, I haven't seen it in a couple years, but you've been harping on it ever since we launched your podcast. The way the NFL is, where someone sneezes on a receiver, they throw a flag, you've been harping on throw the ball in the air and, you know, 9 times out of 10, you might get a flag or something along that nature. Today was the first time I saw it, and that was a pass to DeSean Jackson.
It was. Left sideline?
Left sideline. And, of course, there's no connection, but Jackson got the flag. First down, Bucks.
Yeah, I said you should do it four times a game. One will fall incomplete. Two will fall incomplete. You might hit one, and one out of four doesn't sound so good, but you're going to get a flag on the fourth one. So that's like two out of four are good. I'm sticking with that. You got to take advantage of the new NFL. The new NFL says throw the ball. You're either going to complete it or you're going to get a flag.
Speaking of putting the ball in the air, what do you make at the end of halftime? I don't have the specifics in front of me, but the Bucs had a first down on what, their 18 roughly. Carter calls a timeout, the last timeout. Instead of spiking the ball, he calls a timeout. There was 18 seconds left, if I remember.
30
seconds. Well, they get down to 9 seconds. They're not scoring. 9 seconds left. That's plenty of time to throw the ball in the end zone. And instead, Cutter's like, we're kicking a field goal.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? He still didn't trust James?
It was a bizarre sequence.
Third down, 9 seconds left.
You're out of timeouts.
Out of timeouts, but you're on about the 18. So there's no way a play to the end zone is going to take more than 8 seconds.
So you can take a shot to the end zone.
He got a shot, he turns it down.
Bizarre. Bizarre, because even though O.J. Howard's out and he's a big target, you still got Evans.
Yeah.
You still got Brayton.
Yes.
Who Jameis loves.
Godwin.
And Godwin. A little bit bizarre. Now, let's also mention that this new kicker, he's doing a good job. He's doing a good job. We're not talking about kickers. That tells you right there he's getting the job done. And by the way, I've been watching his kicks. They're kind of right down.
Perfect.
Right down Broadway.
Perfect. I talked to him after the game. And
is there anybody you didn't talk to?
Plenty of people I didn't talk to. But he was talking about how he sort of figured out the crosswinds here at Raymond James Stadium.
Damn.
And he said they're pretty predictable, and he likened it, I believe, without my notes in front of me, to Chicago, kicking there, and very comfortable, right down the middle. He said he thinks he has it completely figured out. He said, I know it's one game. I'm not going to start, making declarations, but very comfortable, and they are perfect. The kicks are right down the middle, which highlights one thing, Ira. Again, I'll say this again, and it drives me freaking nuts. Santos was available 6 weeks ago.
Outstanding point is
6 weeks ago, the Rams cut him. He filled in for the Rams, did well. They cut him because their kicker came back healthy. And there he was sitting there, and Light is telling everybody.
What a track record.
This was the guy I wanted last year, and they let Catanzaro cost his team. So now they're 4-7. If Santos was here, maybe they're 5-6.
Maybe they're 5-6.
And all of a sudden, here comes Carolina, who's 6-5, and things are different. So I put that on Light. Not that Santos would have made all his kicks, but man.
I can't argue with
you. What were
you
waiting
Steven?
For? Yeah. But Ira, is it fair now? Let's say call it like it is. It's Tuesday podcast. Everyone's listening. Carolina 6-5. Things are tightening up around the NFC. Should the Bucs have a prayer in this game? Should they be thinking maybe we can run the table?
If they run the table. If they run the table.
What's going to say? Is there any?
They can't stumble.
Is there a lifeboat? Ira, is there a lifeboat here for Dirk Cutter? That's what I was going to ask. Is there a lifeboat?
Yes. The run the table lifeboat. And then the three of us say, bring them back. All three of us. I don't like to speak for you guys, but what did I say a month ago? Win 9 freaking games. That's what I said. Do I think they're going to do it? No. The schedule's rough. Here come the Saints. The Saints are marching in another week. You know, if you get past Carolina, and going to Dallas is no bargain. They're playing good football.
Baltimore won today.
Baltimore. Yeah. Run the table. Save your job. I don't see it, but it's there. It's there. You know, today was a start.
Well, you know what? There's a certain writer that covers the Bucks, been covering it for not quite as long as you, Ira. He's come out and said it's one or the other. Either Cutter's coming back or Jameis is coming back, but both of them aren't coming back.
Well, we got the Jameis meter at 80%. So is there any chance if they run the table that Cutter and Winston come back together? I wouldn't discount it.
I'll say this.
Because that means that Winston played well under Cutter down the stretch.
I'll say this again. The landscape changes. You have to put yourself in that fantasy, right? So it's like when you're thinking of women, right? It's a fantasy. So if the Bucs run the table, let's say they win 4 in a row, right, from here. Let's say they get to 8-7. The whole town's going crazy.
Absolutely.
And Cutter and Jameis are hugging it up. Hey, Coach Dirk, we figured it out. And everybody, the Blazers are going bananas. And we're going to have a big game.
He's comparing this to Penelope Cruz or somebody like that. You know?
Well, I was going to say, he talks about fantasy. There was this one cheerleader I monitored in the third quarter. She got one move. It's a hell of a move.
You're supposed to be watching the game, DeKemp.
During the timeouts.
They don't dance during the game, Ira. Get with the cheerleader program. No, seriously, Ira.
Win 9 games. Now, I said it.
People are driving off the road. They're going to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon because they just crashed their current vehicles.
Crash all you want. If the guy finishes the season with a 6-game winning streak, you're going to fire him?
The Bucs aren't running the table with this offense. Excuse me, with this defense, and they're not going to go crazy like people think. But what I think is fascinating is that Jameis can single-handedly help his odds because with every game they win, that hurts their draft status. And the thought of drafting a quarterback changes, right? If Jameis, in his mind or in his world, if he can get the Bucs a few wins, then, well, they're going to have to trade up a big stock to get a quarterback they want. It changes the whole landscape for himself.
Steve wrote this story Saturday, and I'm going to let Steve explain it. I personally call caca on it, and if I was Joel Siegel, which is Jameis' agent, I would call White's bluff, the Glazers' bluff on this. Why don't you explain the story, like Dominic?
Wasn't there a movie critic on one of the TV stations?
The big hair.
Joel Siegel. Yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
Didn't you babysit for him too?
Was that Joel Siegel? Got the hair and the mustache.
No, anyway, what the heck?
No, Joel Siegel was not. That was the guy with the giant
Gary
hair.
Gary something or other.
No,
Gene Shalit. But there was a Joel Siegel.
Joel Siegel. Yeah.
All right. What'd you write on Saturday? But it's not that I read these things, but what'd you write?
Very simply, Mark Dominic was on the radio saying he believes, and he said in his heart.
Why is he always talking about the Bucks, Mark?
Because they ask him about the Bucks. He's doing a local radio interview.
Is he living here? Is he still here?
Once a week.
Nashville.
He's still got his contacts around the league, still working for Sirius.
What did he come up with?
He said that he does not believe at all that there is a team out there that would pay Jameis $21 million next year. So he believes if Jameis looks pretty good and the Bucs decide they want him to be the guy next year, so after a couple of weeks, like in December, say it's December 10th, the Bucs internally decide we want Jameis next year, they would have a little leverage. Because in Dominic's mind, everybody around the league, nobody would pay Jameis that much for next year on a one-year deal. So he believes the Bucks could go to Jameis's agent and say, he didn't put a number on it, but he said, hey, we want to sign Jameis right now for next year. We know no one's going to give him $21 million, so I'm going to make a number up. We'll give him $18 million. Let's lock him, guarantee it today. And
he feels they have leverage.
He feels they would have leverage in a few weeks.
I don't agree with Dominic, and maybe that's because that's one of the reasons he was 28-52 over there at DeKemper. All it takes is one team, Lee. And there's plenty of teams in this league that don't have a quarterback as good as Jameis Winston. I'm not buying it. I'm selling that. I'm not buying it.
Well, not just that. If I was Siegel, I'd call their bluff. Like, okay, we'll take our duffel bag.
Haven't you been saying that he'd be the most coveted free agent on the market?
Many people are saying that he'd be the most coveted free agent on the market. And here's the hammer that Siegel has in the Bucks. What are you going to do without Jameis? You going to go out and get Bridgewater? You going to go out and get Tyrod Taylor? What are you going to do?
Now, I'm not giving him $120 million extension. No, I'm not doing that.
Here's the rub, and I don't really agree with Dominic. I certainly wouldn't wager on what he was saying as being correct, but he does have a ton of sources. He does keep in touch with guys around the league, and so that's an interesting element. He does have sources in this building as well.
Hey, did you buy me a $10 ticket?
I did. We'll talk about that in a minute. So
I want to know what I can do. I want to cash that ticket, man.
So, Sage, here's the thing. Jameis would be the most coveted. This is the fine line. Some of the commenters on the site didn't get it or whatever.
Oh, they went wild.
Jameis would be the most coveted free agent in the NFL. I believe that. But at what price?
True.
Okay, so that's the catch. Dominic didn't say nobody would want him. He just said no one would pay him
$21 million. The price of mid-range quarterbacks.
So,
that's the price.
The Glazers can save a few million, I don't think they would waste.
Wait, haven't you been saying that number is middle of the pack quarterbacks?
I mean, it is. Number 18, and that is projected. What I mean by that is that it's quite likely there's going to be a couple of quarterbacks have their contracts reworked during the offseason. You can easily see Jameis hit salary, that $21 million, $20.9 million. You can easily see that in the bottom third. If there's a couple of quarterbacks have their contracts reworked, it's currently 18 right now.
Sage, we got a couple of key elements here. We're going to talk about that money and that wager. We've got a couple other nuggets with the Bucks and Team Glazer. And, of course, your podcast, as we heard in the open, is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. The fantastic offers roll through the end of November, and then you get to look next week at the December offers, but don't waste time. The opportunities are fantastic. EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com, EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Ira, we saw you on TV. You looked good on Tailgate Sunday today.
Tanned.
And what's on your mind? You're at the edge of your seat.
All right, well, I just want to throw this out to you two esteemed, and this is what Brooks calls me on that identity thing, my esteemed colleague. I can't believe Brooks is saying that, because he didn't call me that when I was covering him all those years. But can I throw this out to you, gentlemen? Could you make an argument that is credible that after almost 4 years of pro experience, Jameis Winston has shown more promise as an NFL quarterback than Marcus Mariota?
Yes.
Could you make that argument, Stephen? Could you?
I think it's very different.
If both guys hit the free agent market, who would be more coveted?
I don't know.
I think Jameis.
I don't know.
Because Mariota's always hurt.
I think it's a fair question.
Mariota's always hurt.
Now, he made the playoffs last year.
He made the playoffs last year, and he didn't make it. And he didn't win that game on his arm. He made it because of that freak play.
But they made the playoffs.
They made the playoffs, but he's got a better team around him, number one. Number two, he's not the passer that Jameis is. I know people will probably throw up when I say that.
He's more careful with the ball.
He's more careful with the ball, but he's not a threat with his arm that much. He's a threat with his legs, very much so. He's still... Well, people say, well, Jameis is still the Jameis in college. And he's taking chances and throwing picks. Well, Mariota's the same guy he was in college. Injury prone, not a great passer.
And the Titans are mediocre this season. Yeah, they're a mediocre football team. That's all they are.
Tennessee. Well, the Bucs aren't even close to mediocre, Ira, so there's that.
Tennessee's defense is much better than the Bucs.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, Mariota's got a better team. When people come up to me and they say, oh, Jason Light screwed up, he didn't get Mariota, I said, no. If you want to make an argument, he should not have drafted Jameis. I'll give you Carson Wentz, but I won't give you Marcus Mariota. Mariota was a really, really good spread option quarterback. And yes, there's some spread elements in the NFL now. Yeah, I know he beat Jameis head to head here. That's because of Lovey. By the way, Lovey got a contract extension.
What?
His son is a thief.
We should have started the podcast with that.
I'm not joking.
He got a contract extension?
The only thing I can think of, his buyout on his contract was obscene. $12 million. So the only thing I can think of, the only one I went to, I'm like, we're going to redo your contract. We're going to give you an extension, but we're getting a better buyout clause.
That's the only thing I could think of.
But
they're drinking too much champagne and champagne, I'll tell you that.
Flat champagne. Like I said, Mariota, I was never impressed with him. I didn't like his style. With the Bucks, when it came between Jameis and Mariota, I was hoping they wouldn't draft a quarterback at all if they didn't get Jameis. I just never was a Mariota guy.
Stevie, you can't argue the point. Winston played a heck of a game on Sunday.
He did, and I know a lot of fans are going to be like, hey, okay, this is the Niners on the road, 1 o'clock game, not a good team.
I don't care who you play.
But I don't care either. The idea is to play well. One thing I got to say, though, because I felt compelled to look it up here, because I actually got into an argument with somebody about this. Mariota hasn't missed that many games. I mean, he gets the knock for being injury-prone, but he's missed six starts through his first 3 years. Jameis missed how many starts last year?
Yeah.
You know, was it four or five?
Yeah.
And then the suspension or whatever. So, I mean, it's different.
What's Mariota's record as a starter?
23-27. Not sure what they're doing.
Better than Winston, certainly.
Mariota's got nerve damage in his passing.
Yeah.
He's not the passer Jameis is. Answer your question, hard for me to compare. Two different players.
But it's an arguable, it's a good argument. It's not a one-sided argument.
Yeah, it'll be an argument for years, you know, until...
they're forever linked.
Until one of these guys steps forward. Now, Ira, as loyal podcast listeners know, I got you a ticket, $10 on the Bucks, given 3.5 when I was at the Jersey Sportsbook. So you're a winner, young man.
And didn't you get the Kemper a $40 one?
$40 ticket. Oh, well, he's more valuable than you
That's
are.
That's four times more valuable than I am.
That's because I'm posting at 2 o'clock in the morning while you're snoozing.
What do I do with the ticket? What do I do?
On the back of the ticket, it tells you where you can mail it, and they'll send you a check.
Beautiful.
So there you go.
So it's not, you don't do it online. You send it in.
Unless you're going to New York in the next year. But otherwise, you can mail it in
Jersey, not New York.
You do your Jersey, but you have to send it registered mail. So that's going to cost you like $2.
Are you serious?
To make eight, yeah. But if you want to send it with mine, I'll send them together because I got $100 on the Bucks today. we're all victorious.
Well, let me get this right. 100, 40, and 10. Is that the way we should be judged by Buck fans too?
Did you get a check from them today?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All is well.
Everything's good in Ira land. All right, Ira, look. The rest of this game here, the Buccaneers.
By the way, I went to the Lucky Dill in Palm Harbor. Heck of a place yesterday. Picked up some matzo ball soup, a pastrami sandwich, a little chopped liver, and a little Nova Lux. I turn around and she goes, $81, please. What? What? $81. I didn't even get a crull out of this thing.
Well, that's.
I know it was carrot cake too. I took.
How many people did you go with?
I don't know. I took it out. I took it for me and my wife. Now, you know, I loaded up on the matzo ball soup because she's not feeling well. Anyway, there was a guy standing there. He was getting like a pound, 3 pounds of turkey or something. You know, classic, you know, New Yorker type. And he goes, "You're the Sage." I go, "Who?" He goes, "You're Ira Kaufman, Joe Buck's fan." I go, "I might be." Depends how, you know, whether you like the site. Love the site. Don't miss it. And you know what? The guy, I don't know his name, but very knowledgeable. That's the kind of people we got listening to this podcast and clicking on that site. These knowledgeable Buck fans, they're not dummies.
No.
They are so frustrated, but they know their stuff. And I was very, very impressed with that guy. Now, he didn't pick up the $80 takeout order. He left. And I'm surprised he didn't make me buy his turkey.
I don't understand. But, two people, $80 takeout from Lucky Dill?
I couldn't believe it. I don't know.
Well, that sounds like knowing their portions. Sounds like you got enough food for like 4 days.
I asked for a quarter pound of lots. I think she gave me 3/4 of a pound. I don't know what's
could
going
be.
On.
That
there.
Could be. That could you be.
Know? Those pastrami sandwiches will put you to sleep.
Yeah, I only had half.
Yeah.
Then we went home. I watched All About Eve with my darling wife last night. A classic, 1950.
Oh,
classic.
I thought you were talking about Neve Campbell.
Betty Davis, all About Eve. Absolute classic.
I thought you were talking about Neve Campbell. Wouldn't you see an All About Eve?
No. Come on, Neve Campbell. You're thinking about the cheerleaders. Well, what's going on?
I didn't know she was a cheerleader.
All right, say
you're looking at that statue. That makes me nervous.
He doesn't have a pen in his hand. Unless he has a pen in his hand, you got nothing to worry about.
You know, we talked a little bit earlier about DeSean Jackson getting out of here next year. And I just hope it doesn't come to a point where the frustration boils over to where he becomes a more of a problem this year, or becomes a thorn, because that might be a test of Jameis Winston's leadership here with this team. He has to somehow grab the leadership reins back in the final weeks. Now, people overblow leadership, but he's the quarterback's got to be
it's going to take several more figure. Consistent performances.
And he's got to be a major figure, and if there is an issue with Jackson, Jameis, it's on him to find a way to fix it. Find a way to fix this thing. That's a challenge for Jameis. He doesn't have to over-focus on it. Maybe you guys think I'm nuts, but find a way to fix it. These challenges are going to come up in your career when you don't have chemistry with a guy or things go wrong. Fix it, because you know what? You can really use a guy like DeSean Jackson against the Saints, and they probably don't beat the Saints without DeSean Jackson early. You got to use everybody. Get them all together.
If he's not here next year, Lee, if he's not,
and
we don't think he will be,
Jackson.
Okay. Will they suffer a little bit in terms of speed on the flanks and stretching the field?
Perhaps, but then again, the year before he came here, they lost a tiebreaker in the playoffs. They've been a garbage team since.
Evans is not a burner.
Evans
is not a burner.
No, he's not. And
Humphreys is not a burner.
Well, does Carolina have a burner? And they're toying with the playoffs.
They got a heck of a running game.
They do. Now, what Steve said, I don't disagree with what he's saying. But let's think about this for a moment. Jameis is in a precarious situation. We don't know if he's going to be here, for sure. We think so.
That's right.
Not for sure.
Not for sure.
Jameis is bigger fish to fry than worry about DeSean Jackson. He's got to worry about himself, unfortunately. That sounds selfish, because if he doesn't play well, I don't give a damn who the receivers are. It's going to cost him mega money.
What'd you make of Lee's nugget that Jackson was the first guy off the field when the game ended? Almost beat the officials.
Beat the officials.
It's a really bad look. You know, you don't know. Like Lee said, you don't know for sure until you talk to the guy. You just don't know. But it's a bad look. And on the surface, there's no reason for it. You know, to not be. He wasn't around the locker room. And usually that means a guy is pissed off and he wants out and see you later. But we don't know. We just don't know for sure.
It reminded me of LeGarrette Blount. And the reason why I bring up LeGarrette Blount, and I would see it with my own eyes, Bucks would win. He's off the field immediately, just running in. One time I caught him. I don't think he took a shower. He got out of that locker room so quick, and I caught him after he left the shower and got something out of him a week after he was traded. Matter of fact, you were in the room with me. There was a suit that came down to the media room. Only people there were myself, you, Ira, and Roy Cummings. And his suit was talking about various things off the record with the Bucks. He was helping us out. And he told me, he goes, "Oh, you can sit here. You're all right. It's not you." And Roy had called him for some reason. I can't remember what. But I was going to leave because it was your deal. It was the Tribune's deal. And he's like, no, you can stay here, Lee. And I brought up Blount. And I told him just what I said on this podcast. That, you know, he would be, if the Bucks won, he didn't get enough carries. He couldn't leave the stadium quick enough. And this suit pointed right at my face. Pointed the finger right at my nose. And he said, "And that's why that guy's not here anymore." I'll never forget that.
Exactly.
All right.
What do you got, Steve?
You know,
what do you got?
The DeSean Jackson thing, it'll be fun to watch, because it probably is the issue that Lee's thinking it is. I agree with that. And if Dirk Cutter's going to keep playing the guy, then that's why I say really that Jameis has to figure this out, because if the guy's on the field, you got to figure it out. Because it'll be best for Jameis. You know.
Sure.
For our listeners who did not listen to Mr. Jason Light before Sunday's game, did you get one stray nugget from Jason Light?
Jason Light, at some point I'll write this up, but he was really going overboard about Nassib. Loves him some, loves him some Carl Nassib. Loves the... something like his motor's always hot. And
and this is before the game.
Nassib played well. Really loves the guy. I'm trying to think. Oh, he was talking about Humphreys. He said Nassib in many ways is Adam Humphreys-like, in the sense that he came out of nowhere in his career. And
gives you everything he's got. Yeah.
I don't think there was too much else from Light. He was very subdued. You know, he doesn't do interviews outside of this. Nobody, I don't really think, is even calling him up, asking him for interviews anyway.
This being the pregame show.
Was he jubilant in the locker room, Lee?
It was jovial. I don't know, jovial. Right. I talked to him very briefly, and I said something like, I said to him, "Hey, the goal line defense." He chatted, "Oh, that was great." And he goes, "Oh, by the way, interceptions too." And I looked at him like, "What are those?"
But he was also talking about Whitehead before the game, and there goes Whitehead, comes out, 10 solo tackles. Great draft pick there, if that kid can
Today really... was a good, Sunday was a good day for Jason Light.
Very good day for Jason
Light. Yes.
in a lot of ways. And Vea can really can come on. And it seems like McCoy and JPP are healthy. JPP, I'll finalize with this, Ira. He was talking about how blowing up his hand made him much more tolerant for other injuries.
Wow.
Because it just taught him I can mentally, I can deal with this.
Wow.
So he said his knee is not in great shape, but he's so toughened by the hand.
Pushed through. And by the way, just a disclaimer, do not try that at home. Don't try to blow up your hand so you can deal with adversity down the road. Don't do it.
You got that, Ira?
If I get a little paper cut, I'm out for 2 weeks.
What should the fans know leading into the big Carolina game?
What they should know, I think Carolina's lost 3 in a row. Is that true?
That's correct.
From the time they beat the Bucks, and went to 6-2.
Heartbreaking loss to Seattle.
And they were on New Orleans' heels at that time. They look like a darn good football team.
The tumbling beginning at Pittsburgh?
Yes, a blowout of Pittsburgh. Ron Rivera goes for the win a week ago and doesn't get it when they could have went into overtime. And then they lose a tough one today.
Yeah, last second field goal today, and back and forth game.
Well, I don't know if this is true or not. I have your response to this. When I talked to Ron Rivera at the owners' meetings, I think I asked him something along the lines, what's the deal with the Bucks? You pounded them early in the season, and later in the season, they had you on the ropes at your crib. And he's like, "Typical." And I'm paraphrasing here. He goes, typical Bucks. They get better in the second half.
This is not a bad time to play the Carolina Panthers, Steve. They're unhinged a little
bit. It is as good as it's going to get. At home, relaxed,
and
unhinged.
And the last thing I'll say is this, Lee, and you can't argue with the facts. This defense plays much better at home. It's a fact. And I think Cam Newton's about to find that out on Sunday.